Thank you very much, John, for this very warm presentation. I am very pleased to be here for at least three good reasons. One is that I enjoyed very much to work for over 20 years with Wei, and to have a lot of scientifically completely unproductive interaction with Stu. I was always very intrigued by his very, very mysterious notes, and I learned much about my ignorance from this contact, so this has been very motivating to me, and moreover, they are very, very good friends. And also, coming here, I realized that Toronto, the University of Toronto, is the place in the world in which I have the highest concentration of good friends all over the world. I have a lot of friends here and there, but in Toronto I have really a group of friends, which is really beautiful. So it's Toronto is a beautiful city, but this large group of friends is really warming me up when I arrive, so that's very, very nice. And the third reason that I have the opportunity here to give something, nothing to Stu as usual, but something to Ray, because this talk is vindicated our very, very, for us, interesting work of 20 years ago when I was in Toronto, because this work has to do again with rare events, and 20 years ago we were convinced that rare events could be treated by using reaction coordinates, and then some 10 years ago with this usual insight and outspoken character, David Chandler started arguing against the validity of this approach by reaction coordinates. And as is typical of the man, bright but strong, he started to do an enormous destruction of all that was previously done on that, showing that this was useless, etc. It was useless, was to do transition pipe sampling. And there is a lot of truth in the fact that transition pipe sampling is a very interesting approach to rare events. But in a sense, it is as if to do statistical mechanics, it would go back to mechanics and forget statistics. In the sense that it's going back to the trajectory in free space and studying their behavior individually, which is not exactly what I do. And so, recently working with essentially with Eric van der Ende, this is transparency. and then we came back to the fact that essentially the theory of the transition rate state, etc., the theory of the rare events, the theory of the activated processes exists and is based exactly on those conditional averages that we were working to measure many years ago. And so essentially we are back to zero, and this is getting me very close. I am an old man, and so of course I have no contact with modern technology, if not for duty. And evidently I would have presented transparencies, but I knew that Ray detested this behavior, this paleolithic behavior, so I scanned them so that I could simulate to have a computer prepared talk, but of course it's false. It is, I hope, readable, but it's evidently transparencies, right? So that's what. Okay. Oh, and so, this is, should be a place in which it wakes up.
You'll
have it to you now. Eh? Go back. Came back. But now it's a bit too up. Okay. So we are back to zero. And in fact, I have today that there was not only Eric van der Ende for this work, but some other people, but they were all incurrent. And what I want to say essentially is to remind you what I mean for rare events. I want to give a definition of the reaction coordinate. I hope we'll close the question of the commutator function with double T in my mind. It's Latin word, so it should be Latin. There you go. And what is our MFEP? That is essentially the acronym of minimum free energy path. And then I want to show in a case, and I hope that we give some natural feeling to the content of the approach, in a case of the molecule of biological interest, but not still a really biological molecule, but in any event, for me, any molecule is a set of point particles with some interaction, so the name is almost accidental. So, rare events. This is very important because this is a serious point in the theory. We need to start from important hypotheses. The important hypothesis that we have could be 3 or 4, but say 2 is enough for the generality of the statement. We have to imagine that we have in the phase space of our system 2 regions, A and B, that are regions of high probability, in the sense that the system spontaneously likes to spend a lot of time in between A and B, and that instead the complementary space is essentially little visited and also for little time, in the sense is rarely I go there and I don't stay much, I escape from there. Okay, so we are speaking of something that if it existed, a family of functions, here I am representing a scalar, could be a vector, could be a few functions, a set of functions, theta, such that by their foliation I could represent the going from A to B by their either surfaces, I would find that in time the behavior of my system in those variables would be of the type a lot of time in A, quickly going to B, lot of time in B, quickly going to A, etc. And if I was taking a kind of, I am not Giotto, so this picture is really not very good, but anyhow, if I was taking an histogram of this behavior in probability, I would find essentially by model distribution, which in terms of the logarithm, they are exactly the same thing, would be, now is more or less evocative, because it's not at all one of the logarithm of the other, the logarithm with 2 minima. Okay, so my real elements are something of this type, and of course, any theory, if the situation becomes confusing, for example, if I have many, many minima in configuration space for a system of n particles identical, the permutation will create, if I have 1 minimum, n factorial minima. Okay, and so it's clear that this hypothesis is important. If I cannot assume that, my theory would be in crisis. And this is why the minimum free energy path has to be preferred to the minimum energy path that people use and to the full description. Is back? Yes. In this condition, we want to compute a few more idiosyncratic quantities because we have this situation of, first of all, not unimodal behavior, so the average has no meaning, the average of the behavior of the system. So what we want is the typical residence time, the transition time in between reaction that is qualitatively given by the energy gap in between the minima and the saddle point, the energy activation to be passed, and typically once I really enter in the domain, what I want to know is what is called the reaction path, which is the way in which the system, in spite of the difficulty, is able to go from one place to the other. Okay? This happens in many, many situations. It's typically represented by chemical reaction, but of course, conformation, transition, nucleation, diffusion of defects in crystals, etc., are all phenomena in which this fundamental mechanism is there. As you have seen, it's very important the free energy, and there are very many techniques for to measure the energy landscape when I have few collective variables. There are also approaches by brute force like transition path sampling, Herbert boundary value, etc. Normally, apart from the last essentially, these approaches are powerful, but they require that I am in a small dimension, in a space of few dimensions, otherwise I have really a problem. So these techniques normally are inefficient when the number of degrees of freedom is high, and very often I am in this case. So I am trying to address the question, going to a situation in which I can use as many collective variables I want. So the theta is not at all a scalar, but can be whatever I desire. He's staying, so let me see if I can. Okay. Now, the first point, and this is just the approach is that the reaction coordinate indeed exists and is clearly obtained in probability theory, and there is no doubt that it's a good quantity because its foliation is really representing geometrically very well what I want, so it's a surface with all the good property. And so to have this simple, let me assume instead of Newtonian mechanics, because Newtonian mechanics misses the easy proof of its probabilistic property. Let me assume that my system is essentially a small perturbation of it, and is given by Langevin equations, okay? Then if I define the probability that the trajectory starting from a point in phase space, x and v is really a point in the phase space of the system, will go to b before going to a, if I take this very simple enunciated quantity, okay, and b is my product region, and I assume that A is the region from which my reaction leaves, then this quantity is uniquely defined, is going typically from 0 when I am in A to 1 when I am in B, because the probability to be in B if I am in B is clearly 1, okay? And is a monotonic growing function whose foliation is really need the status of the reaction at every point. And this function not only is well-defined, but is also well-defined mathematically, because it's the solution of the differential equation that physicists call better Fokker-Planck than Kolmogorov, but in probability it's called the backward Kolmogorov equation, and which is given in very well-defined boundary conditions. So apart the fact that the dimensionality is high, and this can be only the guide to techniques to solve something, because this cannot be solved by brute force, this is a perfectly defined quantity, and if we have ways to get of it an approximation, a glimpse, something, we have a lot of information. So the reaction coordinate is a good concept. Oh, we want to try to get something interesting. I repeat, something interesting, because imagine that we are able to compute this quantity. Given the multiplicity of the minima in phase space for whatever system, we would never compute a clean situation in which there are two minima and so the knowledge of that would be boring, in the sense we would have a function that is not specially spectacularly interesting. So we want to have approximation, but also something better represented in the physics, in which we use free energy and not the energy, the landscape of the energy as the matter. And so we reformulate the same problem, in the sense we find the Fokker-Planck equation not by analysis, but by a variational principle. So we see that our LQ equals zero is the Eulerian associated to this variational principle, and instead of giving for Q the arbitrary space in the space of the function of the phase space, we assume something that is physically meaningful. We assume that Q is a function of phase space through a certain number of collective variables which we think represent the physical behavior of our system. Okay? So the dependence on the phase space is there, but A, we imagine that depend only through the configuration space, which is for what we normally study enough. A number that can be very high, but it's through these collective variables that I see the behavior. This, as a minimum, increase the possibility to have that in the space of the collective variable, this description of two minima and the transition is highly probable. I mean, it's a reasonable hypothesis. Then I, using the fact that LQ equals zero is the Eulerian associated to this variational principle, I reduce my function to the subspace of this function f, and I compute it. And this is simply the computation of this explicitly given this hypothesis, and this grad f with respect to zm grad f, where f and m, these real algebra, are computed, so there is nothing in it. If not, that I discover by computing in this way, that now, while there H was the fundamental quantity, now the free energy is the fundamental quantity, and I have also a matrix that is essentially a metric matrix associated, and for the pleasure of Ray, I see here to appear delta function, which will tell me that as soon as I start manipulating this quantity, I will have conditional averages, which is exactly what is the key of the game. Okay, so now, we want to have the minimum of this functional with the condition that f be zero in the image in z of the minimum, and F is equal 1 because F is essentially the committer function, so we are still where we were. Only for a function is... Yeah, I mean, and but the space of function that was much general has been reduced here. I reformulate the principle, and I have, by the Eulerian associated to that, I have something that is what I want. Okay? So my Fokker-Planck equation, or Beckwork-Kolmogorov equation, in the new language, if I can, oh, either too much or too little. Okay. In the language, becomes simply this equation that is simple, much simpler, but still, if z is a set of many variables, it's still not at all trivial. But this function has a very beautiful character. It corresponds to the Fokker-Planck equation of another Langevin equation that is now completely in the space of the free energy. So which was what we were saying, okay? So if I assume now that my z, this tau now is no more the physical meaning of the Newtonian time, is simply a dynamics. If I assume that my z variable satisfies this dynamics, that you can see is simply driven by the free energy as force, contains a term that is related to Langevin equation, no problem, and a random noise. If you assume this kind of dynamics, this is really the Fokker-Planck equation associated to that, gives us the committer function. Okay? Now, this dynamics is simpler, and of course, since here we know that we are in presence of rare events, we must look for those trajectories to what are the trajectories that go through, and we can take advantage of the lot of things that are known by the theory of large deviation by Wenzel and Fredlin, and in particular, that if the two minima are deep and the barrier is high, whatever be the dimensionality of the space, what happens is that essentially the trajectory, let me call them reactive trajectory, that go through, are essentially in a small tube. Essentially, there is one trajectory going through, and is almost deterministic. Okay? So, the only times that this trajectory is able to go from A to B at the time in which I am going through the saddle point, essentially, and this trajectory is deterministic, which means that since the barrier is very high, that this term being proportional to kt is irrelevant, is a small perturbation, and also this term is playing a minor role. In other words, I essentially can get the trajectory or maximum probability by finding the solution of this equation, of this dynamics, which is the dynamics in which I have neglected the term proportional to kt, and I have neglected the stochastic noise that is not very important. Okay, so if I'm able to find this solution, I have the from the theory of large deviation, I have the maximum probability trajectory, and we will see that this trajectory will give us the possibility to compute the committer function. We are not yet there, but we will see. Okay. Oh, now. The solution of this equation, which does the job, is known, and in the parameter tau is ugly, because since it's going from a minimum to a maximum that is the saddle point, from the saddle point to the minimum, takes a doubly infinite time in the two sides, minimum, saddle minimum, okay, even negative time, and so essentially, to solve this equation, mathematicians call it a heteroclinic orbit, but it's just a word that I repeat. I will not translate for you, okay? But, I mean, we know what it is. It's from the minimum to the saddle point. And in this parametrization, this is difficult to detect, to find. Because we should study the problem in doubly infinite time for any half cut. So the best is to characterize this trajectory geometrically, to parameterize in a different way, and to determine it geometrically. Okay? And this we can do easily, and that's the nice of the game. First observation is that our trajectory has been defined, you have seen, as z dot equal minus this term, which means that the solution is when z dot is equal 0, which means that in geometrical term, the tangent to this trajectory in every point has to be parallel to this term. In other words, the driving force of this trajectory, m grad of f, orthogonal component to the trajectory, has to be zero in every point of the trajectory. This is the geometrical condition that permits to compute the trajectory. Since to take the orthogonal projection is nothing else than to take the projector and to project the vector, so the equation I have to solve in principle is that. Okay? The projection of my generalized force is equal to zero in every point, and again, in zero I have ZA, and in I know the two points. And to be honest, if I didn't know, I could do a minimization problem and fine. But I mean, in principle, in the hypothesis, I know that. If I know that, I can easily compute, because I can do another trick, which is, this is a bit Vivaldian style. I introduce a fictitious time, and I am looking for the solution. I want to, as you remember, I want to look for a trajectory, Z of alpha, and instead of looking at my trajectory solution, I find it by studying the families of curves that converge to this curve at time infinity. This is a fictitious time, so I consider the family of curves in the parameter alpha, that is the parameter representing my trajectory, that as a function of the time starts whenever I want and go to zero at time go to infinity, because this is a problem of equilibrium. Okay, so forget for a moment this second term. If I would write down and solve this equation, the solution of this equation would be a family of curves going from the initial condition up to the curve that I'm looking for. This, of course, I want to do numerically, and to do it numerically means, essentially, that when I solve the first line here, my discretization does not lose precision. So I have a term that is a term, as you can see, along the curve at every time, which is irrelevant for the geometrical shape of my curve, but permits me to keep the length of the tangent constant in modulus, which means permits me to keep the initial discretization stable. So this is numerical. I have a curve, I discretize it. If I was integrating without any condition, points would rarefy or become denser, and I would have region of low precision, region of high precision, so I would lose precision. By this trivial term, that being parallel to the curve does anything to the geometrical shape, I have an equation that is stable that I can solve. This equation is really very, very easy to solve, it's a pleasure in life, because you start from whatever you want. I have put a straight line to say the most stupid answers. You start from something. You are in zeta A, zeta B, zeta A, zeta B, and then you have the initial condition. You use the orthogonal projector of m grad f as the force to deform the trajectory in any point. You impose that the final discretization be the same, and you have the new, and if the new is not yet satisfying the condition to be zero, you iterate. So it's simply simple. Here is the point that is in green, color of the hope, because you will like these two quantities, the condition quantities, and they have to be measured by some kind of constrained dynamics or restricted dynamics. So this is also pleasing you, John, because you invented a way to measure things that are not easy to measure by bias in the potential, if I remember, but this is called umbrella sampling, and this can be used very well here. I mean, this is the fundamental ingredient for the quantity that is statistically meaningful. Okay? So, this is the point. Eric van den Enden, being a very creative man, has already simplified the procedure. Noticing that, because the calculation of the projector is unpleasant numerically, but he has noticed that the projector means that I want to take the component of the force orthogonal to the curve. Well, but if I add also the tangent component, I simply deform the tension of the string, but not at all the shape.
So he has included the tangent component in the lambda, and he has written the equation, a simple equation with the total m grad s. But that's a technical detail, I mean, it's not important. Simplifies a lot the quantity of computing, it's not that changes the content, okay? This is very good to compute this minimum free energy part, but can be even improved in technical terms to compute a bit less things. Okay, and now we go back from this maximum probability curve that we have determined, we go back to the problem of the committer. We want the committer because we want to really to know something about the statistical property of the reaction. And we notice immediately something very, very pleasant. We have defined that our system spontaneously go from A to B in a small region of a space, a kind of a tube, on which my central trajectory, the maximum probability trajectory, the trajectory I want, that is the minimum free energy path. This minimum free energy path, forcefully, since Q is the regular function, will cross my isocommittor surfaces in a certain point. By construction, this point is the point of minimum free energy on the surface, not in general. Okay? So, what we know is that in the point in which the trajectory I have computed crosses the until now unknown isocommittor surfaces of my problem, I have that the parallel component of df over dz is equal to zero, which means that df over dz is orthogonal in this point to the isocommittor surface. Now, if my hypothesis that is essentially a condition of validity of the real events is that I have only a very limited cube around this point, I have, of course, enhanced the drawing, but in this point, if I draw the tangent plane to this curve, I have a very good representation of the cube. And so, if I have n, I have the plane, and if I have the plane, I have the isocommittal surface. So, you remember that the tangent was parallel to that. And so, simply, I can say that n is n minus 1 dz over d alpha. So, the orthogonal to the plane, which is the tangent to the real surface in that region, and for me is a very good approximation of the hypersurface, is there. If you use, this is some calculation that I will skip, because otherwise I think things will become a bit too slow. But this is again essentially algebra with a known equation that we have. If we look what this gives, you get that this isocommittor function has the typical shape that I expect. In the first part, it is essentially zero. Around the point of maximum of the free energy along this curve is essentially 1/2, and then it's saturated to 1, and remains essentially 1. Okay? So, this function now is quantitatively characterized, because I know it through the tangent plane to it, value of alpha by value of alpha, and I also know qualitatively what is this behavior. Okay? This gives also me something better that I really need, because as you remember, I have assumed that my committer function was a function of the phase space through the theta, through the collective variables. And the collective variables is a free choice of mine. So I decide there are 2, there are 4, there are 48, whatever. I can be wrong. So I need a criterion to know if my description of the reaction has been good enough or not. Well, I have here a very nice criterion. I take the point in which the free energy is a maximum, okay? In this point, I sample, by some constraint technique, a family of points on the surface, and I compute from those points if they indeed have probability 1/2 or not to be point of this isocommittor surface. If they are not, the only reason is that my description is poor. And so now that I've been wrong in the description of the reaction. So a consistent criterion that can be extremely useful, and at least in a stupid case, we verify that the situation is such. Okay, and this is coming. Okay, this is my calculation that I will save you from, of the fact that this function is really a sigmoid, as I said. And I come to the application, because that can give us some
light on the mechanism.
It's not completely readable, but you don't need to read much, because this is this infamous alanine dipeptide drawn in arbitrary configuration. They are known to be, and is essentially due to the hydrogen bridges, the two different positions in which there are two positions that are very highly metastable, that are of long residence, that are well known, and people want to know what is the mechanism going from one to the other. And normally, this molecule has been very much studied by MD and whatever. And normally, what has been taken as collective variables have been these two angles, phi and psi, that represent the center of the molecule, because it's a rotation of this that brings you from here to there. Okay? And these two variables have been considered sometimes not sufficient, etc., but essentially a lot is known about them. And we decided to study, this is a molecule in vacuum, so there is not much entropy, not much statistics, I mean, it's a simple case. We decided to add to phi and psi the next angles that could play a role. Okay? So we have studied this molecule in its going in between the two metastable states by studying the evolution of only phi and psi, or also of theta, phi, psi, and zeta, which is our right. We have two different hypotheses on the behavior of the molecule. Okay? And then projected, because in one case phi and psi are the only variable we studied. In another case, instead, we study phi psi and the other two, but we can project the curve resulting on these two. It seems that this scheme has not been good enough, and so this green is not very visible. But you find that what is here drawn is not really the free energy, it's what is called the adiabatic energy. So you fix the two coordinates and you minimize the energy. In this case, it turns out to be essentially identical to the free energy. But anyhow, you have the two minima, which correspond to the two picture I have given you before. You can do your solution in two or in four variables, and in two, you find the green part that is not so seeable, but perhaps you can see. And in the four variables, the projection is on display is this black curve. You see that the two curves are not very much far apart. In a sense, they are close. But if you look in the point of the maximum of free energy, which you can compute along the... Because you remember, we have to compute point by point grad f, grad z of f. So by numerical integration, you get the free energy along the path. This point here represents, and they are very close, for two and four variables, the point of maximum of free energy, because this is clearly the saddle point of the reaction. But you can see that the orthogonal planes to the tangent planes, if you want to the isocommittal surface, the black and the green, are instead very, very different. So this is a strong suspicion that the description in terms of the two variables is not enough, which is not yet the description that instead four is enough. So it's only negative, but it's already something. Okay? This was done by MD, everything was normal. I mean, no problem with the... In this case, the realism is not really an issue, so we have a model for the molecule. This is the free energy, and you see the point that there was the point where I drawn the two orthogonal planes. The maximum is very close by, and everyone here is astonished because in four variables, the free energy has a maximum that is higher than the maximum of the two variables. So this sounds strange because if the rate constant is close to E minus beta F, delta F, the jump, this seems to be contradictory with the fact that this is a better description of that. But this is not true because, of course, there is the transmission coefficient also in the rate constant, and so is irrelevant. I mean, the rate constant at the end of the game can be the same, although the transition state theory approximation can be different. And in this case, it's intuitive, but it's totally reasonable. So the profile of free energy is not very, very different.
But for sure,
there are structures in two variables that are not found in four variables.
And the fact that the planes are so different seems to indicate something. So what we have done is very simple.
Now, the black LED is just an enlarged picture of the one I shown before. So this this black
is the plane
of the description in four variables representing the tangent to the isometer surface for alpha equal 1/2, and the green is the same for the other. We sampled a family of points. Since we didn't use the constraint, we used the restraint dynamics, we couldn't take exactly on the plane, we took around the plane. A kind of two figures, no? We take something like a few hundred points, essentially on the black plane, and few hundred points essentially on the green plane, and we looked if the distribution of probability of going to the reactant to B was 1/2 or not for this. We look at the distribution of the time to go to the product of these two samples reflecting our hypothesis on the isometer function in the black or in the green.
And the situation is the following, that why? I'm going back. This is the distribution of the arrival time. So, how much time do you take to go to B if you are in the sample taken from the green plane? You expected essentially to be a Gaussian very much peaked around 1/2, because alpha is 1/2 is the probability if you stay in this region following the theory. Okay? With a description of only two variables, phi and psi, instead this distribution is essentially flat. There is some more there, but very, very little. Okay? And this more, I think, comes from the region of the intersection of the two planes. There is a region in which the two planes intersect, and there you have this. But essentially it's flat, which means that in two variables you are not getting the nature of the reaction. And then this is what we found in four variables. The sample of points on the hyperplane that for us represent the isometer function 1/2 gives indeed that its points go with very high probability to 1/2, which means indeed something that we were saying before. 4 is not only better than 2, but seems to be enough. So there is no more need of more than that to get the physics you want. I am at my conclusion, which is, if we are right now, we need the applications, and sure, the application, all that is in this list is really under work, in the sense we think that our most beloved association reaction now can be studied. I tried to convince Mauro Ferrario to get enthusiastic of that, but he aged a lot.
After all, before,
my hypothesis is that was already before. Nucleation is also a very exciting sector, because there is a lot that is known, but it's very difficult to characterize. And this is my third part of the conclusion, this technique depends very little from the dimensionality. We can use as many collective variables we want. You know, nucleation is very difficult to characterize, so people have found one order parameter, then two, then three, but each one gives something, and in terms of exploration of the free energy space, if you use many variables, you are done. You cannot do really, okay? Here, you don't compute the free energy over all the space. We get only along the trajectory, and the trajectory is essentially dimension independent, grows linearly with dimension. So our hope is that since here we can introduce as many variables we want, because we are very little limited by the dimensionality of the collective variable, we can do this kind of problems in which the fact that you don't know already the description was getting difficult to study. And so, I mean, in nucleation, in biological reaction, etc., this seems to be quite feasible, and we are looking into it. Okay. Thank you.